Hi, it's Cache from SA here. I'd rather be geocaching, and you're listening to GeoTalk.
In this episode of GeoTalk, we go through the last of your New Year's geocaching resolutions and announce the winner of the Spinner GeoCoin. We speak to Sunny and Sandy from San Diego in the USA, and we open up the debate on the future of geocaching in Australia. All this and more on GeoTalk. Hello and welcome to episode 24 of GeoTalk. Well, you probably noticed if you're living in Australia, we're no longer in a drought in many parts of the country. In fact, after about 6 years of very little rain, it's been bucketing down. And if you're like me, you probably spent last weekend sitting at home just thinking about all those caches that you could have got to. And I suppose over the next few weeks, we're going to be finding which caches were waterproof and which weren't when we open them up. But it's been a lot of rain, and that's good for most communities. And hopefully it'll go inland to a lot of the farmers around the country. So out of something, I suppose it's bad for geocaches, it's good for the rest of us. Just this morning, I watched the Super Bowl 42 from the United States. It was quite a good game. If you haven't seen it, you should check out the highlights, which are probably online somewhere. And congratulations to the New York Giants for winning that. The good news is that once the American football's finished, it's when the Australian one starts. And it doesn't matter which code of football you follow, whether it be rugby league or rugby union or Australian rules, they're all starting up in the next few weeks, so that'll be exciting. And, of course, the World Cup qualifiers for the Socceroos start. So there's plenty of distractions. If you're stuck indoors, there's plenty of sport to watch. One of the things I've been doing over the last couple of weeks is I got in touch with the people who look after the Australian trig points in waymarking and spoke to them about whether or not we can transfer some of the waypoints that were in That's the Trig geocache. You might remember that one from Two Dogs. It was a virtual geocache that was set up, or a locationless one, I should say. And just a word to anyone who did log that one over the last couple of years before it was grandfathered, why not Take the trig point that you found and drop it into waymarking, which will help build up that site, because there are some good aspects to waymarking. And I think when we see Project Phoenix version 2 of the Groundspeak database, we might see that waymarking might be improved and not become the poor cousin of geocaching, which is what we all are about. Over the last 2 weeks, I've been working in the city, which has been interesting and fun. And apart from commuting in and out of the city each day, I also did a little bit of city geocaching. And I have to admit, I wasn't very successful. In fact, on the last night that I was there, I had 0 from 3. So I had 3 DNFs. Now, one of them is a very difficult one. And those in the Sydney region will know about Looking Glass Rock. It's a very difficult one, and I'm hoping I might finish that off in the next few days. But that's city geocaching, so don't be disappointed if you log a DNF. Even the best of us can't find them most of the time. Who am I kidding? Well, that's all I've got to say in the introduction. It's time now for the GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode. And this one's going to lead into something I'll talk about in next episode 25 of GeoTalk. And the question is, which Australian geocacher has found the most 5-5 geocaches? So that's difficulty 5, terrain 5. So which geocacher has found the most 5-5 geocaches? The answer to that question at the end of the podcast. Well, in this episode of GeoTalk, I'm coming live from the studios of Podcacher here in San Diego, and I'm joined by Sunny and Sandy. How are you going?
Hey, hey guys.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Now, one of the reasons I was here was to see the Consumer Electronics Show, but the main reason was to go caching in sunny San Diego, and I've had a ball. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much, guys, for taking me around.
No, you're welcome.
Now, if you want to listen to some of the hilarious stories, and we did get up to some fairly weird shenanigans, some pretty weird weird stuff went down. You can check out the podcast from podcacia.com, mm-hmm. and I'll give you a link in the show notes to that. And I thoroughly recommend, if you haven't subscribed to it already, check it out. They've got 150 episodes plus their midweek ones to check out. So, you know, if you're a bit of a caching hound, you're going to have no trouble getting through all these. If not, well, good luck to you anyway, because it's great entertainment. It's worth listening to. Anyway, while we're here, I'm going to take the opportunity to find out a little bit about caching in the US of A, because a number of us do get let out of the country and we get to fly over the Great Pacific Ocean. And I thought I'd ask these guys what it's like caching in the US and some of the things that we should look out for. So first of all, Sonny, tell me, what have you noticed about caching in the United States that's different to some of the other places you've been?
Well, I think one of the first things is the density. I mean, there, at least where we live, and we live in a rather large city in San Diego, and which is right below another huge city, which is Los Angeles. And caching has really taken off out here. A lot of people have, you know, really caught on with the sport or hobby or art of geocaching. Mm-hmm. And I think just the caching density, because there's so many people who not only love to find it but love to hide it, there's just per capita so many caches in a single area. So that's one thing that I've noticed. Because when we went, Sandy and I took a trip out to Spain. Went out to Spain and Europe, and you know, we were looking for caches as well, and we couldn't find quite as many as we'd hoped for as we were traveling around.
Now, earlier today, I was speaking to yourself, Sandy, about being more selective. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that a luxury or is it a hindrance when you've got so many caches?
Well, that's an interesting question. You certainly, it kind of forces you to have to be more selective, or you're going to be completely overwhelmed. And even living here and having found a lot of these caches, it still can be extremely overwhelming for us when we want to go out for a day of caching. And so it's kind of the downside is that's a limitation. You really have to think, what kind of caches do I want to get, or do I not care? And if I just go out and find the 10 nearest, they might all be lame. but on the other hand, the benefit side is if you are selective and you do a pocket query and you know what kind of things you like, you can narrow down out of all that noise and find some really good caches.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've both traveled a little bit around the United States and you've done geocaching. Are there any differences between, say, the West Coast and the Midwest or over in the East?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that happens out here is the containers can be, I guess, a little bit less rugged. Mm-hmm. Just because we out here in California, we live in such a dry area that the containers don't have to be quite as, I guess the word would be robust. You know, it doesn't rain quite as much. It certainly doesn't freeze and mm-hmm. get snowed on quite as much. And so containers can last out here without having to be quite as rugged.
I think one difference doesn't necessarily have to do with the caches themselves, but maybe how you prepare to go caching. Because like out here, we don't have to deal with generally, you know, things like ticks or near as much as other parts of the country, mm-hmm. you know, where the bug spray is like the number one item you need to take with you or, well, you know, well, so those kind of differences.
Yeah, well, on that point, I mean, Australia gets talked about a lot for some of the nasty animals that we have in mm-hmm. our country, but you guys have your fair share of problems as well. Can you take us through some of the things that an Australian should be wary of?
Well, if you're out in Southern California or anywhere in the Southwest, one of the things you're going to want to watch out for is rattlesnakes. Mm-hmm. They're not common, so I don't want to scare anybody, but they do exist. And, you know, the common thought is that you're going to hear a rattle right away, and so you'd have to worry about it. That's not always true. Sometimes the rattler, for whatever reason, doesn't rattle, or maybe it might actually be missing for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But you got to watch out for those. So you don't want to just be tromping through a bunch of dry leaves or areas where you don't see where your foot's going to end. Sandy and I like to walk around with walking sticks. And a lot of times when we're in uncertain areas, we'll kind of tap in front of us to make sure that there isn't any little beastie under in an area. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing you'd have to watch out for.
Now, one of the other things that we don't really have is things like poison ivy and some of the poisonous plants.
Just going to mention that. That's not just the animals or the bugs or whatever. It's the poison oak and the poison ivy. Mm-hmm. I always forget which coast is which.
We have poison oak on this side and then poison ivy on the east coast.
I probably should know that, but
either way, it makes you itch. And there's also poison sumac.
Yeah, but all of it is bad.
Yeah, all makes you itch.
And so it's something that you kind of have to know what to look for. Mm-hmm. And it's not always just the leaf, because sometimes the branches themselves can still be dangerous, mm-hmm. Even if the leaves are gone. So you kind of mm-hmm. just need to be aware of where it's prolific in the area.
Yeah, there's an oil on it called urushiol, and apparently you get that on there, and some people are really, really sensitive to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you covered these areas actually in a couple of episodes of
hazards of geocaching.
Yeah. So we'll put a link to those so that people, if they're coming over to the United States, can listen to those.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, one of the other things that's very popular here in the United States are some of the geocaching events. You've been to a couple, and they've been quite large. Take us through some of these big events, because first of all, tell us, what is a mega event?
A mega event. Okay. A mega event is an event that's dubbed that by geocaching because it has more than 500 people in attendance mm-hmm. at one time.
Yeah, and you were saying you didn't think anything of that size had ever happened in Australia?
No, nothing at this stage, and I think it'll be a while. So, yeah.
Okay. We got to get more cachers out there. Yeah, that's something to strive for, a mega event in Australia. But yeah, a mega event is where, you know, you get all these fanatical geocachers. Well, newbies, you know, or veterans, they all come together, and it is just fascinating because you can just sit down at a table and start chatting with somebody, you know, you have something in common. But it is just fascinating to get one of these events and see over 500. Actually, the ones we've gone to
are thousands.
Thousands of people there at one time. It's just amazing.
Well, and people travel for quite distances, you know, across the U.S. and also down from Canada and even from Europe. And there's multiple ones, but the ones we've been to are Woodstock and then the GeoBash. Mm-hmm. And Woodstock is more of a focus of just a single day, mm-hmm. although sometimes people come and make a weekend out of it. But the actual Woodstock is just the one day. The GeoBash is a whole weekend. People camp, hang out, go caching together. And usually at the events they have like little seminars or, you know, it's like some educational type thing so people can learn things.
Mm-hmm, lots of activity. And speaking of the Geo Woodstock, by the way, this year it's going to be in Sacramento, in California, Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And so if you guys want to come out and visit some of the United States and stay away from those ticks and rattlesnakes and poison oak and things, or get, you know, your chance to stay away, practice staying away from them, yeah, come to Sacramento. I believe, what month is it? Is it in May?
It's in May.
It's in May.
Memorial Day weekend.
All right. So that should be a huge event, and we're going to be gone. Mm-hmm. So look forward to seeing a lot of people there.
Well, unfortunately, I'll be staying at home. So anyone who is listening in Australia who's planning on going, please let me know and hook up with Sonny and Sandy, who'll be visiting over there.
Yeah.
Well, we've learned a little bit about caching in the United States. Let's learn a little bit about you guys. I mean, tell us first of all, Sonny, you started geocaching first of all. How long ago was it, and how did you find out?
I think I started in 2002 in November, so right at the end of 2002, and I found out from a magazine. It's a National Geographic branch called the Traveler magazine, and there was a little article in there, and it talked about, you know, going treasure hunting geek way by using technology. And so I'm a geek, and I love the outdoors, and so that was a great combination, and so that's how I found out about it.
And how did you find out about it, Sandy?
Well, I first heard the word geocaching from my sister-in-law, who was trying to set me up with this unknown guy. And this was the thing he wanted to do on the blind date.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no idea what it was.
Well, because they were trying to set us up on a blind date. And the first thing they said was, well, why don't you come over to dinner and sit across, you know, and talk to each other? And I thought, no, that sounds awkward. I mean, you know, what if it doesn't work out? So I thought, all right, we'll go geocaching, because there's some hiking involved, right? And then if we don't like each other, we can just walk in different directions or something.
But it was a load of fun. I mean, and we took my whole brother and his family came, and the kids and everything, and I saw what a great activity it is for kids as well. And we had a great time, mm-hmm. and that was the first time I'd ever done it.
And you're hooked ever since.
I was hooked.
What is it that you enjoy about geocaching most of all? What keeps you going?
There's a lot of things. I mean, I love that it's something we do together. You know, I love the fact that we both enjoy it, because I've met a lot of people where their other half doesn't enjoy it as much. Mm-hmm. And so that I really love. I like it's been cool, the people we have gotten to know through geocaching and then through the podcast. And I like going to the events and chatting with people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know this has been said many times, but just being taken to places that you haven't been before. Now, I've lived in San Diego, California, all my life. And while Darren's been out here, we decided, oh, let's go find some caches that are kind of interesting to show him around. Well, you know, it ended up showing us around because we got to some locations just today, actually, that I had never been to before. Amazing views. And I don't know how I would have gotten there, you know, except there was a cache there to go find. So it's stuff like that. But I agree with Sandy, connecting with people, making those, you know, making a community out of it, even though it's a worldwide you know, event or activity, people understand it. So that's really cool.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's exactly true what you say there. I don't think the person who originally placed that cache could have envisaged that, you know, geocaches, one from Sydney and one from San Diego, would be sitting across the table today chatting about the hobby.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the podcast. You started that back in 2005, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, the summer of 2005.
Right. And, you know, it started really just because I'm a geek and I thought, oh, you know, this new thing about podcasting and distributing audio media through the internet with you know, equipment that we have at home, we can do this, honey. And then we said, well, what are we going to talk about? You know, just our lives. Nobody's going to listen to that for like 5 minutes.
You can tell what I thought about it by listening to like our early shows.
Right.
Because you stick in a microphone in my face and I'm thinking, oh, what do I have to say, you know, and how do I talk on the microphone? And it's quite awkward. But
But eventually we said, we'll talk about geocaching. Mm-hmm. I mean, we love it. We're passionate about it. And it's something that, you know, we have some experience with. And so we chose geocaching. And yeah, our earlier, it's frightening and embarrassing. If you listen to our earlier shows, the equipment was not, you know, up to par, and neither were we. And most of it was us. we just didn't have the experience yet.
But it's gotten more and more fun as we've gone along, and we've realized how much there is to explore about geocaching, and haven't yet come close to running out of topics or interesting people to meet and talk to.
And almost all of that comes from our listeners. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, they keep us going. We have a forums community, and, you know, they're chatting it up over there, and they send in ideas, and that's really that community building. So we really enjoy it. But, yeah, our show is all about geocaching. We talk about news, tips and tricks, tools of the trade, interviews, caching events, and stories from around the world.
You've said that once or twice.
Occasionally.
Now, talking about your listeners, I mean, you've become celebrities in your own right. I mean, you were saying to me, one of the events you went to, you were literally getting mobbed, and another one that was sort of someone in Germany had set up a tent and were expecting to see you, but couldn't find you. I mean, what's it like to be recognized around the world, literally?
Well, first of all, it's not around the world everywhere. It's a rather niche audience. I mean, it's just geocachers. But when we do go to something like an event, it's kind of odd. It's kind of strange. I mean, we really enjoy talking to people and connecting with them, but it's a little different. And one thing that makes it strange is the fact that on our website and on our photo Flickr set, we've got pictures of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So when we go to an event, people recognize us and they come up and they say hello and we don't recognize them. Mm-hmm. So that is a one-way sort of conversation that happens sometimes, and we, you know, that's kind of strange.
Yeah, and another thing a lot of people have said, I think you even said it, from listening to our shows, you know, because we chat about ourselves and our lives, people say, oh, I feel like I know you, you know, as a friend. But then they say, but I've never met you before. Right. So that's strange. Yeah. And it's kind of strange on our side too, but in kind of a cool way.
Yeah.
Any surprises or anything to expect in 2008 from Podcasher?
Oh, lots. Yeah, we've got lots planned. Actually, and it seems like each year we build upon the podcast. And again, a lot of it's because of the community we have. We've got lots of prize giveaways, again, from the generosity of a lot of our listeners. Lots of games, lots of contests. And it like Sandy said earlier, we thought when we first started this podcast that we wouldn't have a whole lot to talk. In fact, it was like show number three. We're thinking, what are we going to talk about? And show number four, honestly. But now we can see that there's just so many different topics on this wide expanse of geocaching to talk about.
And final question for you both. At the start of a year, we all have our New Year's resolutions saying we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And sometimes we break them most of the time, actually. Mm. What's your geocaching resolution for 2008?
Geocaching resolution.
Well, I was talking about this a little earlier. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really formed it into a resolution, but we've been looking at because we mentioned it recently on the show about mm-hmm. finding all the caches with the 81 different combinations of terrain and difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we have a little over half of them, mm-hmm. like 45 or so. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking in the area for the ones that were missing, and mm-hmm. I've been throwing them onto a bookmark list. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really said in my mind how many of those I'd like to get,
right.
but I'd like to start tackling them.
There was a term that you used for that in that episode. I think it was well-rounded.
Well-rounded, yeah.
Well-rounded,
because
yeah.
a lot of the ones we're missing, frankly, are the more difficult ones. And mm-hmm. and there are also some of the really cool either multis or puzzle caches around here mm-hmm. that we've heard about for a long time, but we've just never made the time to find them. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to tackle some of those.
Yeah. No, that's a good goal. My goal, no LPCs.
Honey.
That's going to be a hard task in the area.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes I just won't know.
Yeah.
Really, I think maybe I'm looking for those caches that'll take me to those vistas, to those scenic views, purposely seeking them out. I think sometimes going paperless has its good and bad side to it. And I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about doing things paper was selectively choosing those caches. And being, because you're not going to just keep printing hundreds and hundreds of caches, but you can load hundreds and hundreds of caches mm-hmm. on a GPS or a Palm Pilot. Well, when I was doing paper, I was a lot more selective. And I think that's what I'd like to do this year, is be a little more selective about the caches and purposefully go out for those ones that interest me.
No, I know that was the final question, but I'm going to slip one more quick one
more.
In. One
okay.
more very quick one. When are we going to see you down under?
Down under.
We would
love to be down there. Yeah. If we can figure out some way to get out down there. I mean, for those of you who are listening in Australia, you don't realize for us that's such an exotic place. I mean, it's just a world that we've only heard of and can dream of going to, but we'll have to figure out how to get
down
there.
We'll have to figure that out. Yeah. No immediate plans.
Well, look, it's a fantastic podcast. It's the inspiration for this one. I recommend it. Look, it covers tips and tricks, tools of the trade, news and views and stories from around the world. It really,
pretty
truly
close.
Is a global podcast. Check it out at www.podcasia.com. I'll put a link on the show notes. And once again, thanks very much for your time, Sunny and Sandy.
All right. Thank
thanks,
you.
Darren.
Now it's time for part two of your geocaching New Year's resolutions, and we got a few more to get through before we decide who the winner is going to be. First of all, we got an email from Craig Ratt. Last year, he nearly kept his resolution of finding a cache, at least one cache each month, failed in the month of November. But this year, he's decided he's going to try and do 5 caches a month, spend more time doing some development work on the Geocaching Australia website, attend more events, and enter some of the GeoTalk contests a little bit earlier. Well, you snuck this one in time, so thanks very much for that one, Craig Ratt. Okay, we've got another one from 3-Day Growth down in Tasmania. Their resolution is to firstly earn their bronze Earth Cache pin and then hopefully get their silver one, and also to cache interstate. Our next geocaching resolution comes from Bear Cop. They're hoping that in 2008 they will hone their geocaching senses, meet more local geocachers, and design a few puzzle caches. They might want to check out some of Zitherans over in Adelaide. And Cal, also known as Cal D from the Gold Coast, writes in to say, first of all, they're hoping to find Smurfing Stingray, which apparently is a very difficult cache up in that neck of the woods. They're also hoping to reach a century of finds, so that's 100 finds. And they want to place a cache out in a local national park in a spot that they've had their eye on for a while. But it could be quite a hike to GZ. So we'll be looking out for that one in the near future. And finally, our last geocaching resolution to come by email is from Mac and Rita. Now, Mac and Rita sent me quite a lengthy email, and I will edit down a little bit. But first of all, they were writing to say thank you very much for GeoTalk, and they've been listening to the episodes going from episode 23 backwards. Their resolution is to use geocaching as a tool to improve their general health and fitness, and they've called it, and I like this phrase, health by stealth. And one of the reasons why is because Mac says he's been in hospital for a bit of surgery on his shoulder, and he actually had his first to find the other day after the operation, and says in brackets, obviously the painkillers hadn't worn off yet. And he's looking forward to trying a few different types of geocaches, I'm hoping to find some virtuals in the near future as well, and very pleased that they've learned how to track and log and move along travel bugs, which they learned from a geocacher who was quite well known to them. Obviously, maybe they didn't know they were a geocacher beforehand. So anyway, that's their New Year's resolution. And finally, we got one sent in from Setsujoku over in Adelaide.
G'day Darren, Martin here from Setsujoku. Currently on 729 caches, found up until the 30th of December. I guess my wish for the new year would be just to reach the 1000 mark, or at least have a good go at getting there, as close to it as possible. I guess apart from that, my other wish would be for plenty more pub lunches. They're a great event and definitely good company. Look forward to maybe racking up a few more caches interstate, and hope to add Queensland to the list of states where I've cached. It's one of the few things I haven't got done yet. I guess Melbourne and Sydney will be a good place to see more caches, so I look forward to getting over there. Apart from that, maybe even a few Perth ones, actually. Yeah, apart from that, just more time on the road, see more of the state, get down to Mount Gambier, maybe even trip over to Lincoln or something like that. It'd be great. So hopefully the caching gods have plenty of caches out there for me. Thanks, mate.
Thanks very much, Setsujoku. I can never quite get that one right, for phoning in that geocaching resolution. Finally, just a point of clarification. In the last episode, I obviously got the Alexes mixed up. I forgot that there are actually two geocaching Alexes from Adelaide. So Alex from Adelaide. The geocaching resolution that I read out was from Team Canyonero, who actually own the Canberra geocache Can You Hear the Drums or Bells, Fernando, which is actually near, I think it's on Aspen Island from memory. And it's one of the very first geocaches I found. Whereas Alex, who is Alex by the same name, owns Cartographics Map Store over in Adelaide, and he has 1,000 finds. So Alex from Cartographics recently found the 1,000, whereas Alex from Team Canyonero, who was probably hated by a number of Canberra geocaches for that horrible cache over there, he's the one that sent in the geocaching resolution. So that's our geocaching New Year resolutions for 2008. Thank you very much to everyone who entered. And you're probably wondering now, who's won the spinner coin? Well, we're going to give you the result at the end of the podcast. Regular readers of the Geocaching Australia forums will know that there's been a bit of conversation lately about funding of the website. Now, for those of you who haven't come across it, the Geocaching Australia website has been run now for about 5 or 6 years, and it's been done on a voluntary basis, and it's been funded out of the good nature of one of our more famous geocaching personalities, Ideology. Now, of course, the amount of traffic that travels on that has reached a point where the servers now need to be funded. If you follow the link on the show notes, you can read about the discussion behind how best to fund the Geocaching Australia website, and you can even contribute your thoughts and ideas to it. Also, in the Australian Geocaching Forum, there is a link in the Senate section about a geocaching association, which I've posted and one or two others have added to as well, about the need for an association in Australia. Now, there are a couple around the world. Great Britain and several states in the US have them. So check out that link as well to find out a little bit more about that proposal, and feel free to add to it as well. Once again, it's time to have a look at some of the geocaching events that are happening around the country. And in the last week, there's been quite a few new listings. As before, I mentioned on the 10th of February, over on South Moreton Island is Island Time. That's near Brisbane, so you can head over to that one. And in the Grampians in Western Victoria on the 10th of February is Grampians Picnic. On the 26th of February is the fairly regular pub lunch over in Adelaide. It's pub lunch number 13 in the Aussie summer. That's being held by the Barramundis over in Adelaide. And heading into March, on the 2nd of March, is the ACT Cache of the Year over near Lake Burley Griffin in Canberra. On the 1st of March, the day before, is the second annual Illawarra South Coast Get Together being held by the Rats. And finally, on the 16th of March is the City Circle Scavenger Hunt by Caught at Work down in Victoria. So there's a couple of events that are happening around the country. If you want to send in some audio to promote your event, don't forget 850-GEO or email it to geotalk@mac.com. Okay, it's time now for the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode, and that is, who has found the most 5-5 geocaches? That's difficulty 5, terrain 5. And the leader at the moment with 7 5-5 finds is Kuroi Scout, so congratulations to them. And coming up in equal second are Team Astro, Liz and Bruce, and Odera. And then it's a big tie, a big logjam there for equal fifth with 3 finds at 5-5. It's IF, Eco Team, SA Parrothead, Abawi, Tangles, The Rats, Dax Emu Mob, Team Web Guy, and MindSocket. So that's the answer there for that GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode. And now, as promised, we're going to draw the winner of the Spinner GeoCoin for the geocaching resolution competition. And we had quite a few entries. Thank you very much to everyone who entered. And hopefully we'll have a few more competitions throughout 2008. We've got Supernay, who's now going to put her hand into the barrel. So in it goes. Drum roll. And the winner of the Spinner Geo Coin for the Geocaching Resolution 2008 competition is...
Kale D.
Congratulations, Kale D. You're a winner. So get in touch with us in the next 2 weeks. Email us at geotalk@mac.com and let us know your address, and we'll post off that Geo Coin in the post in the near future. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. In our next episode, we're going to catch up with Caught at Work, who's one of the programmers on the Geocaching Australia website, and find out about some of the latest enhancements on the GCA website. Until next time, safe geocaching.